the main theme of Abram, I see not just in the Old Testament, but in the New as well, is the promises of God. The promises of God. Consider that theme, because do we not have promises ourselves? It would be interesting. I didn't see if I could Google it, because Google knows everything, we know. I didn't Google it to find out if somebody had gone through the New Testament. It would primarily be the epistles or the letters, but there would be some in the Gospels. How many of just in the New Testament are promises, not to Israel, but to us as believers? That would be quite interesting, and I bet we'd find more than we might guess that there is. The promises that we have sometimes include unexpected blessings. Now, it probably would be a good title for last week's message. The last week's message, when we looked at Genesis chapter 12, the end of it, we see that Abram goes down to Egypt. And having gone down there, he lies, is deceitful, though technically, according to the similar event that happens with Abimelech instead of with Pharaoh, technically it's not a lie. But the intention was deceit, to save his own skin. There we found an unexpected blessing, because God used that to provide physical blessing to Abram. Now, what promises, just to remind you, what promises were made? Where do we find in the Bible the promises, the beginning promises made to Abram? Do you know where? Genesis 12, very good. Genesis 12, you're going to have that memorized before the end of this. And the reason is because that's what his life revolves around. Not the way he lives his life, but how God works in his life. Look here, we see in Genesis chapter 12, Abram, get out of your country to the land that I will show you. I will make you a great nation. I will bless you. I will make your name great. You shall be a blessing. I will bless those who bless you and curse those who curse you. And all the families of the earth will be blessed. Abram has promises made to him that are fulfilled in him. That are fulfilled in his descendants, and that are fulfilled in you, even. All those promises are expanded and made an official promise in chapter 15, but we're not there yet, are we? God demonstrates fulfilling his promises by not only providing for his needs, but going above and beyond by supplying great riches to Abram in Egypt. Well, now last we left him was in Egypt. And then we find him come back home to his property. Why do I call it that? Well, because you're going to find out it is his property. God said he'd give it to him. Let's go in chapter 13. Abram went up from Egypt, he and his wife and all that he had, and remember he has his nephew with him, Lot. And guess what? Abram and Lot had a lot. That's what the verses say here. Lot with him to the south, or to the Negev. This larger portion down the bottom of the Negev, the southern desert, the wilderness area. In the Old King James, it's direct from the Hebrew, called the Negev. Sometimes spelled with a B, sometimes with a V. The reason is because the letter is B, but when it's spoken, it's V in Hebrew. So as confusing as that all is, when the B is at the beginning of the letter, it begins with B, like Bethel. But when the B is in the middle or the end of the letter, it's a V, like Negev. Isn't that just wonderful? Aren't you glad you know all that Hebrew now? You can just go down and buy yourself a Hebrew Bible. here you have, that is where he returns up to the Negev, the south there, where he went to begin with. He stopped at the circle there, Bethel and Ai, and then he moved south to the desert area, and then down to Egypt as the famine came. But now he's coming back up to the south there, and then verse 2, Abram was very rich in livestock, in silver, and in gold. And he went on his journey from the south. The reason it says south instead of Negev in New King James is because the word Negev also means south. As far as Bethel, and Bethel means house of God, to the place where his tent had been at the beginning between Bethel and Ai, to the place of the altar which he had made there at first. And there Abram called on the name of the Lord. You look at that last verse there, and the last phrase. Because the last phrase seems to have nothing to do with the rest of the passage. We have Abram coming from the south. In verse 5, Lot had a lot also. And then the story goes on and they split. So why is this last phrase here? Well, ultimately because God put it there. That's why. But I believe this. I think we can see this here. Abram is faithful. Abram is faithful. Abram, he got away from his land and from the gods of that land, and he went down and he went to a land of Canaan where they served and worshipped all kinds of other gods. And so what did he do? He made this altar and he worshiped the one true God. It's so exciting to bring the trucks out for it. God made he built this altar, worshiped the one true God amidst everybody else. Remember Elijah? We talked about I think it was this morning a little bit, when Elijah thought he was the only one, and he's pouty and all that. We talked about it in Sunday school this morning. He was the only one. And God said, wait a minute. I've got 7,000 prophets that haven't bowed down to Baal. Well, guess where we're at? Who knows God? Abram, Sarai, and the Lot. We can go into the boxing ring as whether or not his father Terah did. You know what? That makes for a lonely person. Could you imagine if you were here in the United States and you were the only person of record, the only person that acknowledged the one true God? I don't know if that was necessarily true, if Abram was the only one in that particular land. It seems to be, but not necessarily. But if you're the only one in all of America, everyone else has their worship idols in front of your house, either in the front or in the back. Either you go and you see at somebody's house, you'll see a statue of Mary or a saint or a Buddha, those different idols that you find. And they had maybe their God standing out front there. Maybe because they wanted to protect them, like Laban, they had them inside on the mantle. Wherever they may have been. And you are the only one out of the whole United States who's got a cross outside your house. That would sure be interesting, wouldn't it? Now, you know that your Christianity affects your entire life. The way you think, the way you live. Why do you do it? Because of love of the Lord. Well, why do they do the things that they paganly do? Because they love their idols, or themselves, or whatever it may be. He went to this land where all these people are worshiping false gods, and Abram builds an altar there. He goes down to a land of Egypt, where they serve all kinds of other gods. And he, perhaps the only one there, has any fear for the one true God. How much time has passed? Well, probably at least a season to get out of the famine. And now he's come back with all his stuff. I'm trying to think, if you had that much stuff and that many people as part of your heritage, and to be able to pack everything up and move it, and then be somewhere, you don't set up for a week, do you? You set up to be there for a while, and then to come back up, I'm sure it may have very well been a year or a few years. He is under the influence, even perhaps the pressure, perhaps even the interest of all of that. Curious, isn't it? How should we consider Abram then? Well, I think we should see him as very faithful to God. Because when he gets back up to the house of God, Bethel, he sets up an altar and he sacrifices and worships on it. This phrase here in verse 4 seems out of place, that that is where Abraham, there he called on the name of the Lord, but it points to us that he is still faithful to God. We need to make sure that we're faithful to God. One of the interesting questions that was brought up by the speaker, Pastor John Jenks, was, what is your favorite sin? And he explained that, well, I don't have a favorite sin. What sin is it that you keep going back to? That's your favorite sin. Now think about this. If that's your favorite sin, who becomes your God? It becomes that sin, right? Because you put that sin in a place where God belongs. We need to be very careful when we read these passages about the worshiping of other gods, because we like to put in our mind the little idols and dismiss it completely because we don't have those little idols. We have those idols, but they're not physical idols that we see with our eyes, but they're idols nonetheless. That is, they're not little statues of funny-looking creatures, except troll dolls. And those aren't gods. Those are just weird. Instead, we have other kinds of gods. We have things that distract us from God. Myriad of things that we would sometimes rather have than God. Things like red Corvettes. Things like bags of chips. Things like baseball. Many times our own pride. We are too proud to admit our sin and confess it. It could be money, or work, or whatever else keeps us from being faithful to Him. Being faithful to Him, not in the sense that, oh, I'm there at church every Sunday, but being faithful to Him in that every area of my life is affected by what He says. Therefore, whatever you do, whether you eat or drink or whatever you do, do all to the glory of God. How is your life affected by that? If we really love God, isn't that what we ought to do? Certainly. Another thing I observe here in this faithfulness is that we need to be grateful to God for all that He does for us. The great blessings that He gives to us, our health, our family, our house, our life, all of those. We don't know what sort of sacrifice He was intending, whether a sin sacrifice or a thanksgiving sacrifice, just a worship sacrifice, whatever it may have been. But as I consider what sacrifices often are done for, I think about gratitude. Think about what He acquired while He was in Egypt. the promises were being fulfilled, why wouldn't he worship the one true God? So, always remain faithful to God, no matter who else or what else is going on in the world, in your world. Secondly there, use gracious generosity. Verse 5, Lot also, who went with Abram, had flocks and herds and tents. Now the land was not able to support them that they might dwell together, for their possessions were so great that they could not dwell together. And there was strife between the herdsmen of Abram's livestock and the herdsmen of Lot's livestock. The Canaanites and the Perizzites then dwelt in that, the Canaanites and Perizzites then dwelt in the land. And Abram said to Lot, Please let there be no strife between you and me, between my herdsmen and your herdsmen, for we are brethren, we're kinsmen. Is not the whole land before you? Please separate from me. If you take to the left, then I will go right. If you go to the right, then I'll go to the left. I want you to consider here the generosity of Abram. Being the elder, as should be in our culture as well, who should have the preference of land? Abram, right? As a matter of respect, as a matter of honor of one that is older than you, here in our culture, you still see some of that. We've got generations that have no regard for their elders, but you still see some people that have a graciousness towards elders, that if there's choices to be made, sometimes even choices in their own lives, they will defer to the older person there out of respect for them, out of honor for them. In this culture that he lived in, there is no reason Abram should have surrendered, yielded. That was a word that was used in the Bible conference. There's no reason that he should have yielded to Lot. He had every right to say, this is the land I'm taking, you can go that way. Or says, I like it right here, you get out. He had every cultural right to do that. Now, sometimes people look at this passage. In verse 10, it says, Lot lifted his eyes and saw the plain of Jordan, that it was well watered everywhere. That was before Sodom and Gomorrah was destroyed. But you might remember that Moses is writing this. He has had this handed down by tradition, by word, vocally, directly by God himself, and perhaps there may have been some writing in between, but as far as the Pentateuch here, the Genesis through Deuteronomy, Moses is the author, Moses is the writer, God's the author of it. So he's looking ahead and saying Sodom and Gomorrah was destroyed, but when Lot looked over that plain, it was beautiful, well watered, everything that way, and he decided that was the direction he wanted to go. Some would come back and say, well, see, because there was strife there, that was just the beginning of Lot's trouble, getting into trouble. No, I want you to know that we need to make wise decisions as well in how we do these things. Before I get there, in generosity, Abram says, I'm more than willing to give that up in order for you to have it. And I'm willing to stay here or go over there. We need to be generous, yield even as they did. We live in a society that's gimme, gimme, gimme. I was talking with somebody at the conference, not during the speaker speaking at the conference, but during the conference time, and they said they were talking to a young lady, and they mentioned Heinemann, and she had no clue who Heinemann was. And he said, that's part of our problem here in America. And so she asked me, so, well, that's the governor of Nebraska. Well, is she asked, is he good or is he bad? I said, well, what makes him good or bad? Do I get things out of him? But that's our culture. What can I get from the government? I will vote for you if I get more stuff out of you. That's the way we live our lives. I may choose a different job because I can get more money out of it. Or I could choose to do this sort of, go with this crowd or do this sort of activity because it'll entertain me more. After all, if I go to church, all I gotta do is sit there. But if I'm at home, all I have to do is sit there. And so we decide to stay at home. Not you folks, but that's the way our culture is. It's a gimme, gimme, gimme. What am I getting out of it? I go to church, why? Well, because I want to get what I can get out of it. And we're not talking about the spiritual nourishment. We're talking about, well, can I make friends there? Can I get any money out of the place? Will they wait on me hand and foot? We live in such a gimme society that we must not be tempted to follow after those gods, the god of me and selfishness. Romans chapter 12, verse 18 tells us, as much as it possible, it depends on you, live peaceably among all men. And so Abram says, in order to resolve this issue, I tell you what, we'll split up. And so that way there's no hard feelings. You choose which way you want to go. Romans chapter 12, verse 10, a little earlier, says, be kind and affectionate to one another in brotherly love, giving preference to one another. Letting them go first. Giving them the higher honor. You taking the smaller, and it's hard to say it, but you taking the smaller piece of pie. Galatians chapter 6, verse 10. Therefore, as we have opportunity, let's do good to all, especially those of the household of faith. We need to make sure that what we are doing in our lives isn't for us, but for Jesus. We need to make sure that the life that we live is to honor Him. In doing so, we might consider that in a very practical way. What about tithing and offering and deacon's fund, or maybe serving other people? Those are different ways that we can take God's word and put it into practice by putting others first. We do need to make wise choices here. And Lot, right off the bat, because we know what is going to happen, we say he made a bad choice. No, he didn't. If you've got a choice between a beautiful, brand new, never driven, red 2014 Corvette, and you have a choice of a really old, broken down Yugo, which would be wiser to choose? Well, obviously the red Corvette, just think of how much gas mileage you save because it goes so fast everywhere. Now, obviously we get the newer one, whatever it is, because the older one, broken down one, already demonstrating it's not that reliable, would not really be a good decision. Lot, he's got all his stuff. As he looks at all his stuff and says, because I have all this stuff, I need lots of stuff. That is, all the cattle and sheep that I have, I'm going to have to be able to feed and water them. And as I look over and I see the land, it's beautiful, it's green. In fact, it describes it here like the garden of God, the garden of Eden. He sees that and he says, wow, this is a no-brainer. That's where I'm going to go. Now it says here, Lot chose for himself all the plain of Jordan, and Lot journeyed east, and they separated from one another, and then Abram dwelt in to the other side, and he dwelt in the land of Canaan. And Lot, he dwelt in the cities of the plain, and pitched his tent even as far as Sodom. Now, how wicked was Sodom at this time? Probably pretty wicked, especially in light of the next couple of chapters. I want you to consider in our own hearts what we are doing and why. Let me give you an example. We might choose something that's very helpful. Listening to the radio, watching TV, having the internet, being with a certain group of friends, eating certain kinds of foods. All of those things are not necessarily wrong. But if we're not careful, what happens? We get ourselves in trouble with it. Maybe with TV, it's a matter of what we watch. Maybe it's not what we watch, but how much of it we watch. That's the same to do with food. It's not how much food you watch, but what you do with the food that you watch, and how much of it that you watch. And it could be on the internet. We know the dangers of the internet. You can get on there and just on accident, get in places not to be. And so you have to guard yourself from that. Friends that we have, how many times have we talked to our children about it, and yet how often do adults sometimes get in the wrong crowd? How is it that a person can get involved in drugs when after they're grown grown, they got a job and all that, and next thing you know, their whole life just comes crashing down? How does those kinds of things happen? They get around the wrong people and develop the wrong kind of relationship with them. You are with the wrong people, not here, but out in the world. That's good, because you can be a testimony and you can be a witness to them. But when your relationship changes to the degree that they're influencing you rather than you influencing them, you need to change your relationship. Because even as adults, we hang around the wrong people, we'll start saying things we didn't used to say before. We'll start having the attitude we didn't used to have anymore. Remember Proverbs, when it warns you? Don't hang around an angry man. You'll follow him right in his ways. Who's that written to? It's written to a young man. And all of us as well. Well, I'm still young. I'm not yet 40, right? We need to make wise choices. And sometimes the choices that we make might be wise, but we have to be on guard because they can lead us to the path of sin. Lot, I don't know what his thinking was as he got in there. Before he looked too far down on Lot, remember 2 Peter chapter 2, verse 7 calls him righteous Lot. Well, thus far, as we look and see what's happening here to Abram, we see that God has brought him back to the land that God has promised him. He has taken him back there, led him back there with all sorts of stuff. He's rich. And he goes back and he comes to the land where the place where he first set up the altar and worshiped God, and he does so again. He remains faithful to him. We need to always remain faithful to God. Now, when it comes to an issue that took place, a personal issue that was going on, Abram took the high road. Not that Lot did not, but Abram took the high road and said, "Look, we're going to have to separate here, but I tell you what, you choose." And Abram was very gracious. We need to use gracious generosity in all that we do. We also need to make wise choices. make good choices. Lot didn't make a bad choice. But as far as we can see, until you see him move closer and closer to Sodom, that probably was not a good choice. And then Abram, where he was, the people were wicked there too. Remember what happened to them people? Years and years later, Joshua come in and was supposed to have annihilated all of them. Well, come down here to verse 14. Now the Lord said to Abram, after Lot had separated from him, lift up your eyes now and look from the place where you are, northward, southward, eastward, and westward. For all the land which you see, I'm going to give to you and to your descendants forever. And I will make your descendants as the dust of the earth, so that if a man could number the dust of the earth, or the dust in your house, that's probably enough, right? There your descendants also could be numbered. Then also your descendants could be numbered. Arise, walk in the land through its length and its width, for I give it to you. Then Abram moved his tent and went and dwelt by the timber tree of Mamre, which are in Hebron, and built an altar there to the Lord. So on the map you see that he has moved up right at the top there is Bethel in Ai, and then you drive the road on south to Mamre. We go all the way across to the Dead Sea and further down we see where possibly it seems that Sodom and Gomorrah may have been. We don't know exactly where they are, because you know what happened to them? They got all of them destroyed. And one wonders if maybe they were placed under the water there for some time also, just based on the land structure. We don't know for certain. But it is curious that we find the land down there and Abram coming south there to Hebron, where he's going to stay for a while. In all of this, we find that Lot chose all that beautiful land, and Abram gets a lot of rocks, that rocky land over there. But the blessings are still there. It's a surprise. It's just like a birthday. Or if you're Ethan, like 8 birthdays he's had so far. I don't understand it. I get kind of jealous about that. I hear I had a whole birthday month and I hardly got a day of it. And he only gets 1 day of his birthday. See, I'm almost 40. Not yet 40, so I get a whole month's worth of birthdays. He's not near that old. He's had like 3 or 4 birthday fun yet. So, and it's still yet going on tonight. He's excited about that. Here we see that God still blesses Abram. It seems strange because Abram's not in the luscious land that's almost like the Garden of Eden. But God is faithful. We need to remember God's faithfulness to us. He made the promise, remember, in chapter 12? He's been fulfilling it in chapter 12, now in chapter 13. Because the land promise is made, and the descendant promise. What's so strange about it is that he and Sarai are barren. Sarah's barren, and so they don't have any kids, can't have any kids as far as they know. And on top of that, it's the land of the Canaanites and Perizzites and all the other ites. So how in the world does it belong to him? Well, God gave him the title to it. He removed the title from the peoples of that land, because God's the owner of it, and he gave the title to Abram. So now all those people, guess what? They're illegal aliens. Not Abram, all the rest of them are. He was kind enough to let him live there for a while, wasn't he? The story is filled with a lot of surprise here, if you think about it. we find the surprise that despite all the culture that Abram is in, he remains faithful to God. We find the surprise that Abram, despite all the rights that he had, he was generous and gracious. And despite getting the raw end of the deal, as it were, God still blessed him. Your life has had, and will have unexpected blessings. Sometimes we perhaps would get out in like Abram and say, well, I didn't get all that luscious land. All I got was this, the rocks over here. And we're too busy considering all the rocks that we ignore what God is blessing us with. Don't forget, God gives unexpected blessings. Abram saw it. Well, he actually didn't just see it. God told it to him. And God tells it to you. Remember, he says to be thankful in everything. Why? Because it is his will for you. And his will for you, is it for evil or for good? For all things work together for good. Those who love him are called according to his purpose. Well, if that's true, then just consider where you are at right now. You must remember to always be faithful to God. In your faithfulness to God, you look around and you see people with needs or people with desires. I'm not saying you have to run down tomorrow and buy me a 2014 Stingray Corvette. Next week would be fine. Use gracious generosity in displaying God's love towards other people. Along with this, make sure you're making wise choices. Not only in saying, hey, I see the great benefit of this, and so I'm going to do this, but stay alert. Remember, the devil's just right around the corner, can't wait to pounce on you. Those decisions that may be very wise that we make might lead us to trouble. So take the whole thing into account and make sure that you're safeguarding yourself. Lot could have had a couple different options. Seeing the wickedness of the city and the spread of its disease of sinfulness, he may have chose, hey, I've got to go a different way. Or he may have said, I'm just staying away from that place. Whatever his decisions may have been. Whatever decisions that we have and we make, let's make them wisely and godly. Finally, remember that in everything, to enjoy God's blessings. God had blessed Abraham with much stuff that he got out of Egypt. God was blessing him with the promises he was making to him as he has moved down to Hebron. God's made you a great number of promises. Hold on to those promises. And know, just as these are being fulfilled from Genesis chapter 12, God is faithful.